Welcome to Personal Branding Unlocked. I'm Monica Walmsley.
And I'm Josh Lawler. And together, we're here to equip you with the tools, strategies, and insights you need to help you build and enhance your personal brand. If you work in professional services, your personal brand is your unique signature that sets you apart.
In each episode, we'll delve deep into the art and science of personal branding, share real-world success stories, and bring in industry experts for deep dive discussions.
So get ready to embark on a journey of self-discovery, growth, and empowerment. This is Personal Branding Unlocked. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. Another hectic, busy week.
Yeah, we're recording this at 6 a.m. the day before it goes live. We found it hard to come together to record the intro. It's been a good week.
It has. Yeah, yeah. So I signed up to another program through the uni, which is a bit silly, but it's really cool. It's called iLead. And so last week I went to my first, I don't know what you call it, like session info thing with Mark Hughes from the Mark Hughes Foundation. So it was really, really cool. And it sounds like an amazing program too.
Yeah, it looks really interesting, but I can't believe you're adding something else to your plate.
Well then, yeah, also last week, the other committee that I'm on with the uni is the marketing committee. And yeah, we had that first session last week. That was really cool. I organized the Hunter Breast Cancer Foundation Golf Day for Friday last week, which you came along and volunteered at.
Yeah, he did an amazing job. It was such a good day. It even rained and everyone was still so happy to be there.
Ah, thank you. Yeah. And then, yeah, this morning we're going to the Hype event with Declan Edwards.
Yeah, yeah, looking forward to it. Just as a little hint, he might be coming on the podcast soon, so this will be a good
preview. It's a really subtle hint.
So watch this space. I had a good week. Definitely great to be back into the recruitment market. Looking for lots of solicitors, particularly employment and family lawyers and commercial lawyers. So if anyone's listening and is looking for an opportunity, would love to help you. I also have some amazing candidates that I'm working with. So if there's any firms that are looking at the moment, yeah, I've just had a busy week of meeting firms and meeting solicitors looking for work, which has been good.
Maybe I'll add a law degree onto my workload and that can come and help you out.
I would love that.
We've got a really, speaking of that industry, our guest this week is James Dapachi. We, you'll hear in the pod, we had a bit of trouble figuring out how to pronounce his surname.
Yeah.
But we got it in the end. Yeah. But yeah, you know more about James. He's amazing.
Yeah, you might know him on LinkedIn from Coffee and Case Notes, which is a little video that he does. I think it's like at least once a month, but he's quite well known on LinkedIn, has an awesome personal brand and was just so engaging and such an interesting person to interview. It's a great episode.
Yeah. And here it is.
Enjoy.
All right. So today's guest is James Dapachi. Have I said that right?
So close. Perfect. But also, we don't really say it right either. And there's a fun story I can bore you guys with in a moment or two.
Okay. All right. James is a seasoned commercial and litigation lawyer based in Sydney, renowned for his unique blend of approachability and rigor in legal practice, with a passion for resolving disputes between co-owners and a specialization in areas like stakeholder disputes and corporate oppression. James has become a trusted expert in navigating complex legal landscapes.
Not only is James a renowned legal professional, but he's also the visionary behind Graverman. Graverman? Graverman? Am I saying that right?
That's okay. Also an open question. I'll take
a thriving
business. Graverman, but I'm very relaxed. Thank you.
Great. A thriving business that stands at the intersection of legal expertise and client-centric solutions. Graverman, founded by James, has become a trusted partner for clients facing challenges in co-owned assets, offering tailored strategies and resolutions.
In addition to his legal prowess, James is the creator and presenter of the entertaining and interesting series Coffee and Case Notes. Through this platform, he combines his love for law with a cup of coffee, summarizing up-to-the-minute cases in an approachable manner.
With an active and engaging social media presence across platforms like Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, James has successfully built a community around his passion for law and sharing legal insights. Welcome, James.
Thank you.
That's the most wonderful welcome. Delighted to be here chatting on the pod and just realizing now I need to work on my pronunciation if I'm to be actually good at marketing a law firm. So thank you both. I'm already learning things.
We jumped on your LinkedIn because you've got the little part where it tells us how to pronounce your name, and we thought we had it nailed.
I also don't have it nailed. So it's actually an Italian town south of Rome. It's the D apostrophe sort of means of, so you're of this town. And if we were to pronounce it correctly, it's something like Apice. And because I am technically Italian, but we're going back so many generations, the pronunciation has been sort of bastardized to come down to Dapici as the kind of Australian version. So pretty much anyone can pronounce it however they like and will pretty much know what they're saying. My mum was a school teacher, and apparently in her grumpier phases, she would end up with Dabici. So there's various incarnations of it, but I'm very, very relaxed with however it's pronounced.
Teenagers are assholes.
Couldn't agree more.
And then we start every episode with the one question that we ask all of our guests. And it's, what do you think is the number one thing you can do to build your personal brand?
I hate to use another buzzword after you've just used the phrase personal brand. And I'm so sorry to everyone listening. Get your vomit bags or whatever nearby. But it is the word authenticity. And before you dismiss it as puff, what authenticity really means is a being yourself element to the way you show up as part of your marketing, whether it's online or otherwise. If you're doing something the opposite, if you're doing something inauthentic and playing a role or putting on a mask or whatever metaphor you're going to use, then at some stage the mask is going to slip. And at that stage, you'll have that awful experience like when you're socializing with someone who has a much more flattering photo than they appear to be in real life. And you have this real sort of disjoint between the person who you formed a sort of parasocial relationship with online and then the person who is appearing before you in the conversation you're having over a cup of coffee or a glass of wine or whatever it may be. And so the way to avoid the risk of the person you're meeting with feeling a bit weird, feeling a bit yuck, feeling like you're a bit of an inauthentic person is to lean into that authenticity in the material you're putting out to the market and trying to have as consistent a presence with what you put out online as you would in an interpersonal setting. Authenticity. So sorry to use the word, but it's such a useful foundational element to any project like this.
We totally agree. Actually, last season, we had a thing where we said we'll have a drinking game with how often we say authenticity. Because we're big believers in it. And not even just, you know, how you come across to the other person. It's so much easier to be yourself. You know, I'm a natural people pleaser. So sometimes I do, you know, try and be who the person wants me to be. But then when I actually take that risk and be myself, it's much easier. It's much more enjoyable. And if you make a genuine connection with someone, they like it for you. If they don't, then that's not what to be.
It's such a good point because there's the superficial element of like, right, am I more likely to transact with a larger number of people if I push out a more vanilla version of what a lawyer looks like? Maybe yes, maybe no. But am I more likely to build, exactly as you say, Monica, a deeper and more resonant relationship with someone over the long term if I'm consistent between how I appear, you know, as they stare into their phone at whatever time they choose to stare into their phone or listen to their podcasts? Is there a consistency between those two things? And I think if the answer is yes, then you've got more likelihood of building those more resonant, longer term and, frankly, more profitable in the genuine sense, relationships. In a business context, we won't do life advice on a podcast about sort of branding and marketing, but you want to be comfortable with the you are putting out into the universe, whether it's sort of socially or indeed very much in a commercial, transactional sort of context.
Yeah, and even on a more superficial level as well, I used to screen every photo that I'd take to make sure there was no chins, but now I'm there, I'm like, you know what? The chins are there when the people meet me anyway, so.
Well, it's also a time saver, right? So if you have to have 7 photos taken and choose, I can't toss up between number 3 and number 7, I wish I had the same posture I had in number 3 with the angle of my face in number 7, that's just time and energy you're investing. And so the other thing authenticity does is it gives you the power to iterate. So my hope, even when you guys are thinking about the way this, just to get a bit meta, the way this podcast goes out, I say the word director instead of shareholder, I accidentally swear or whatever it might be, or, you know, misquote the name of a case or whatever. And the view I take is those moments happen in life. And if you go back as part of your content strategy to be like, oh, everything must be as refined and perfect as possible, then not only are you putting out a product that might be thought of as overly refined or at least refined, right? But you're also investing a huge amount of time and energy in doing that. And that's time and energy that you could have invested in recording another episode, chasing another guest, you know, responding to some engagement on your socials, that you're spending instead on going, you know, enhance, 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 enhance. So I'm a big fan of the 80-20 approach to publishing content of any kind. And I think the authenticity is a nice sort of weapon in your arsenal. It kind of pursuing that iterative 80-20, let's get this one done and catch it on the next one sort of approach.
Yeah, we barely edit our podcast because we had that same opinion. Like, because otherwise we could spend hours going through and perfecting it, whereas we've just found that, you know, people enjoy what we say in the moment. So,
and then your listeners get to know you better. If you're someone who says, I'm a lot in person, and, you know, the podcast is edited to remove those, and you go, oh, where are all these ums coming from? This is a strange experience. Then there's almost that jarring moment as well. No, I'm a firm believer in your guys' approach to things.
Great, awesome. Great. So talking about your career, so what's led you to starting a career in law?
Yes, my dad was a lawyer and his dad was a lawyer and his dad was a lawyer. And so all I knew as an edgy teen of the kind we referred to earlier was, I never want to do that, man. I'm going to do music journalism. I'm going to make rap music. I'm going to be a firebrand uni lecturer who like sets things on fire and does exciting revolutionary things. I worked in community radio for a number of years and sort of really tried to engage in those creative focused or community focused elements of my personality. And alongside that, I completed a degree that sort of focused on history. And I formed the quite mercantile view that I'd probably need more marketable skills. And so I did a law degree. Even during that, I was like, whatever, man, I'm not going to sell out and be a sellout lawyer, man. And, you know, as Batman has taught us, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself practice corporate law. Over time, you know, the completion of the degree, I was like, well, I'll at least get some experience. And I did that with the ABC. And then having got a little bit of experience, you then go join a private practice firm, and I practice at a number of those. One of them, the former Newcastle firm, Harris Wheeler, that I still have fond thoughts of. Varley, I think it was incorporated into Hall and Wilcox, you guys were telling us a few months ago. And so drip, 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 because I wasn't passionate about being a lawyer sort of ever, but because I'd seen my dad do it and take some, you know, professional satisfaction and enjoyment from having done it, I guess there was always the element of me that I was open-minded to say, oh, well, let's see how I feel in 2 years' time, and sort of family comes along and you know, if you want to keep rent paid and all these sorts of things, you want to take a few steps along on that career ladder. And because I wasn't on fire with how passionate I was about law all through my sort of teenage years, I was a little more open-minded to the finer and more technical fiddly bits of the profession as they came to arrive. I wasn't sort of burnt out with having been captain of the debating team and just, you know, always, you know, having done all my work experience in barristers' chambers and kind of desperately burning for a legal career my whole life. And because I wasn't sort of desperately burning for it, there was an opportunity for a slightly more slow burn and perhaps slightly more resonant sort of arrival at saying, oh, well, it appears that I'm, you know, competent at a few of these funny little issues that other people have problems with. It appears that I'm not, you know, particularly underpaid. It appears that I sort of take some pleasure in things that other people don't take that much pleasure in. And so sort of drip, 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 those little moments sort of tend to compound over time. And so it's been a bit of a happy accident that the law's almost sort of come and found me. But having said that, I think it's important that I check the privilege I referred to at the start of the conversation of it's always easy for a legal profession to come and find you when you've got, you know, 5 or 10 of those kind of professions in your family tree and you can get your work experience at a law firm. So I think it's all well and good for me to say, oh, the law just came and found me. I do just want to check the privilege I've had, because not everyone comes up in a background where both parents went to university. Not everyone grows up in a background where they've got the sort of stability at home that allows them to study hard, you know, during their HSC or during university or whatever it may be. So I'm very happy to say, oh, it was just a little thought bubble that arrived and now I practice law. But I do just want to check the monstrous amount of privileges I bring to a little anecdote like this.
And I would say, you know, given that you had that experience prior to in general business, prior to then becoming a commercial lawyer, that would be so beneficial for you when you're talking to clients, because you could see it from their side of the fence as well. You know, whereas people that go straight from school to uni, straight into a commercial law role, they don't have that exposure, I guess, or that understanding of the fear and I guess the risk that people that own a business kind of can and won't or will take. Has that helped you with your journey?
Can I piggyback and say yes, but only it took about 10 years. So
right.
when I began private practice, I was looking around for these lawyers who I wanted to emulate. Monica, you and I probably have a similar approach to the world where I go, all right, well, what are the gun performers in this area I'm in? What do they look like? What do they sound like? What are their sort of habits and behaviors? How do they present themselves before judges? How do they present themselves before registrars? How do they present themselves before opponents, before clients, these sorts of things? And the metaphor I've got in my head is that you sort of create, as a lawyer and probably most kinds of professionals, you are both Dr. Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster, right? You're kind of creating the sort of practitioner you are. I still name files like one of my former mentors. The approach I take on the phone to like aggressive, fiery phone calls is a lot like my second mentor. Shout out to Wal. The way I appear before a judge is essentially my best impression of a partner at a former law firm that I used to work at, who I get on with very well. And so you're sort of creating this Frankenstein's monster that is also yourself. And that's what you're projecting into the marketplace. But Monica, to come back to your question, I did that for 6, 8, 10, 12 years and created a very effective mask that looked so much like a lawyer, right? It had all the little lawyer bits and I got a little bit of this from here and 1% of this from there and a little strand of that. So the DNA of this mask was DNA that I'd spent some time splicing together, if that metaphor works. And it's only been the last 8, 10, 12 years where I've sort of allowed that mask to slip a little bit, to almost lean back to that authenticity point. And it is then that I realized the return on what you just referred to, Monica, of, well, who cares about having done 4 or 5 years in community radio? Who cares about having made silly rap music that you yell at other people in, you know, the car parks of the inner west of Sydney in the mid-2000s? And the answer to that is a number of people. And some people don't care, and that's also fine too. But it's kind of been an unfolding pleasure a little later in my career that those non-traditional law career path things, CV things, the co-curricular things from the past have sort of come up to show their value a little later. And I've been really grateful for that. So Monica, you're 100% right, but there was just a bit of a 10-year lag in the middle there for me.
And is it the family that has inspired you? So I saw you specialize in commercial and litigation law. Is that a family inspiration? Was it like your dad or your grandfather that sort of led you down that path?
Both my dad and my granddad, who's passed away, so RIP to him. Hugh, what's up? Hope you're well. We don't have to get too spiritual, but whatever you believe, I hope you know that whatever belief system is treating him well in wherever he is or is not. No, both my dad and granddad and other assorted family members who also practice were very hands-off. They were very like, hey, cool, you do what you want to do, you know, and we'll support you so long as you're pursuing whatever it is. But if you want to quit this and, you know, train up to be a baker or whatever, that's fine too. So they took a very, an admirably hands-off perspective. And so I felt zero pressure to pursue any particular path. My area of practice today, that's a little boring for anyone who doesn't practice, who's listening, but essentially it's arguments between the co-owners of assets or the co-managers of assets. So if, for example, you've founded a podcast and you get on extremely well and it all of a sudden becomes very financially viable and you get all these professionals coming on who are very excited to be there But in a couple of years' time, you decide, well, someone's working a little harder on this and someone's just kicking their feet up and just chilling and doing very little. And there can be essentially a business divorce is what some people refer to it as the dispute that arises between people who co-own a business. And then there are people who co-own other assets. So the three of us might be beneficiaries of mum's estate. Mum might have been a successful business person, or as often happens, mum might have been a farmer and there might be a very valuable farm. Monica might want to remain on site. The rest of us want to head to the city and do our jobs and just sell the farm and take the proceeds. Because the farm's very valuable, Monica's job as a farmer doesn't give her enough income in order to buy us out of this valuable farm. And so you get to this really fiddly complex sort of issue. So it's those weird co-owners disputes, as I describe them, that I get into. And what's funny is that over time, I've come to realize that I'm almost the mirror image of my dad, in that he does corporate governance issues, but he did it on the transactional side. He would create these entities, create relationships, and create sort of partnerships and relationships between various entities and ensure they ran smoothly and come and cauterize little issues when they came out and make sure these things worked very well. And I've come to realize that I do the exact opposite, which is come to find something that might be working pretty well and sort of, you know, hit it with a stick with, you know, a little rusty nail coming out to be like, no, get my client out of this or I'll hit it more with a stick. So it's been a funny experience to sort of learn that I'm the kind of bad guy version of the area of practice that my dad did so successfully for some time. And of course, there's a nice personal feeling to that. And, you know, he and I can discuss it and he's a very useful guy to talk to about these kind of things as well, as you might imagine. So it's a nice resonance, but there was never any firm mentoring in that. Firm technical mentoring from a skills and professional practice perspective. It was more mentoring and love in the form of just support, family support, rather than specifically about the area of law.
Nice. Interesting. I was trying to, because I jumped on your website and I was trying to work out what your niche was, and that's a really good explanation of it to non-legal people to understand. So
there's an if you know, you know energy, and you guys might have some advice from me, right? Of like, it's designed to be a referral practice. And so if you Google it and you're someone on the street who's inclined to just hop on a call for a long time and chew my ear, because I'm a people pleaser type of person, Monica, you'd empathize. I'm like, oh, well, I'll just let this person chew my ear. And, you know, if that's what they need to do, then that's fine. I'm not really geared up for that kind of SEO accessible type business. I'm more geared up for a referral-based specialist small business. And so the energy I try to put into the marketplace is very broad with my brand awareness and content, but it's slightly aloof with the way you can get in contact with me. And so there's a slight, if you know, you know, kind of energy where you might go, I'll just Google this guy and find out where his office is and I'll show up at 9 a.m. on Monday. It's like, well, you know, best of luck doing that. Of like, oh, I'll just send him a quick text message, or I'll just send an email through to his firm's, you know, just general reception email. It's hello@Graverman. Well, for better or worse, they're not options I'm allowing people to have. And so the only way you'll get in contact with me is if I've already kind of approved the contact, rather than someone just wandering in off the street, if that makes sense. And you guys might have views as to whether that's a good or bad idea, but
I think that's idea. Knowing your niche and knowing where you want your audience to come from stops so much time wasting, and it also means that you're an expert in that place. So are your referrals, say, like accountants that do valuations on business? Because I guess if someone's getting a valuation on a business, they get coming close to, or like the wills and estate solicitors would refer. Is that kind of how you grow your
that's network? Like, Monica, I'm sort of a little struck by how precise those thoughts were and those guesses were. That was my plan A, right? I'm like, I'm going to be best friends to every accountant and valuer, because those accountants and valuers will be acting for ABC, Concrete Pty Limited. The directors aren't getting along. One of them's old, one of them's young. One of them wants to work hard, one of them wants to retire, and they'll be falling apart and I'll need to come in and help. What has actually happened is more the latter to an extent, but it's also just any lawyer out of their specialty, right? And so almost all of the clients Graviman has direct referrals from lawyers, or they are actual lawyers themselves. And so some of my client base are lawyers who are engaged in partnership disputes in relation to their actual law firms, which is sort of an inception kind of, you know, I'm a partnership disputes lawyer who has partnership disputes about lawyers in law firms. Like, it's sort of a bit of a meta sort of narrative. Some of them are accounting firms, some of them are valuation firms, some of them are financial advisory firms. And so what's interesting is that these people who are expecting to be referrers, right? I was expecting to form relationships with financial advisors in order for them to perceive a chance for me to help their clients, where in fact, in the early days of Graviman and indeed in previous phases of my career, what I'm coming to find is that it will sometimes be those firms themselves. So I was targeting trusted advisors, which is a term you guys will understand better than I do. And now I'm in a very lucky and fortunate position where some of those trusted advisors themselves will come to me for help with their own affairs.
Interesting. So the lawyer to the lawyer. In recruitment, we call it rec to rec, recruitment to recruitment.
Nice. There's
recruiters that recruit. Yeah, you could make a law to law.
The line I've got is that I'm your favorite lawyer's favorite lawyer. And that's like a silly brag, but it just brings me great pleasure. And I'm a little embarrassed to say it out loud, but I also love saying it out loud. So it's a funny, like, that's kind of the energy I want to put out into the marketplace. The sort of, if you know, you know, lawyers kind of know. And that brings value on both sides of the equation for me, because I carry a little bit of a footprint in the very small areas I move in. So once I'm engaged, there can sometimes be a nice shift in momentum, and sort of, if I'm involved, there are specific types of conversation we're likely to be having, and it tends to speed things up and focus people's minds. So I'm very fortunate that that's so far the approach the market seems to have taken to the way Graviman does its work. So I'm very, very lucky.
So I've been stalking your LinkedIn. As soon as we booked you in, I gave you the little connect, and I've just been amazed. Like, your content's really, really approachable. And you even mentioned on there that how important approachability and rigor is. How do these qualities play a role in your legal practice?
I am old enough, you guys won't have had this experience, I don't think, but to remember the way professional services firms were marketed sort of 5 or 10 years ago, when video just started to arrive. And I have in my head these sort of two very firm cliches that just really help refine my thinking. So cliche one is what we lawyers would see of like two old white men sitting at a table, very soberly discussing fine technical legal points that might be an update to the law or a recent decision or something where they're both entirely correct or in the alternative, saying very reasonable and interesting and fiddly difficult things to each other and having a constructive discussion about technical issues, but it's boring. And I sort of describe that as rigorous, right? Nothing they're saying is wrong at all. And probably a lot of what they're saying is pretty productive, engaging, useful stuff. And so but it's boring to watch. But I sort of refer to that as rigor, right? Example one, and then, or cliche one, if we think of it that way. And then cliche two is almost the inverse of that, of someone saying, you know, have you tripped and fallen in a shopping center? Tripped and fallen in a shopping center? Call us on 123-4567 for an obligation free, no win, no fee, da, 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 da. And I call that approachable, right? Your smiley person standing in front of the phone number and going, call us. Ba, 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 ba. And the view I took when I launched this marketing sort of video project of summarizing legal cases in the form of a video was that I could do rigor, right? Those two old white guys chatting to each other. I was like, I think I can do that technical competence or, you know, technical knowledge. And I think I can do the approachability of that second cliche of like, hey, I'm making eye contact with the, you know, even though I'm staring into a strange machine in a cafe, I'm making it seem like I'm making eye contact with you and we're, you know, forming a relationship together. And so I sort of think of that cliche one being rigorous and cliche two being approachable, are kind of two strengths or sort of there's a synergy there of me being able to combine those two that I'm firstly proud of having identified because it's assisted me. And secondly, that I think is really useful in legal practice when you're communicating with a judge, when you're communicating with a client, communicating with an opponent, with a colleague, with whoever it might be. If you're able to be saying technically correct things, that's, of course, pretty useful, that rigor. And if you're able to do it in a way that the recipient is understanding what you're saying and you're not wasting their time, then there's value there too. So having rigor and having approachability have been really formative for me, and I try to cling to both as much as I can in practice and in life.
It's a good motto to live by.
And it makes it entertaining. Coming back to your business, what is gravamen? Are we saying it right? We Googled that as well.
I go with gravamen. I also think, much like my surname, probably gravamen's the technically correct way to go about it. And so we can check in on how the branding's going in 2 or 3 years if you guys will have me back. And we'll see if gravamen's taken over or if I've had to succumb to gravamen as it says it's taken over. But I say gravamen, and I suspect I'm wrong, but I'm allowed to be wrong because it's my firm. It's pretty much the approach.
Exactly. You can say it however you like. Yeah. So what does the name mean? Is it a Latin?
Yes. Words. It's derived. So it's a similar derivation to gravity. And I've been told, and I'm very embarrassed that I can't recall the source, that it may refer to if you and I were ancient people going fishing and we'd throw a net, and that net would be weighed down by kind of stones that would then like sink down around the fish, and we'd catch our fish that way, that sort of apparatus, or at least those stones, are kind of the gravamen. They're the things that are sort of weighing down gravity style. What it's come to mean in the context of the law is that it's kind of the fundamental heart of a dispute, the real thing in issue. Look, we might be having a dispute between the three of us, and we might say someone sent a mean email about this, and someone yelled at me in a meeting, and someone took $500 out of the bank account when they weren't meant to be. But the real gravamen is that James never shows up for work and hasn't contributed to the entity. Like, the real fundamental point is the gravamen. And so what I've wanted to communicate with the name of the firm is to say it's fine for other firms to deal with peripheral stuff. That's awesome. Best of luck to them. And I'm sure they're doing a great job doing it. This firm is about getting to the heart of what's going on. This firm is about getting to the gravamen, the central point, and spending no time on anything other than the real central heart of any dispute, of any issue. And that's kind of what I wanted to communicate with the name of the firm.
And do you use a similar sort of marketing strategies as you do to market yourself for the business?
That's such a good question, because I would have started by saying yes. And there's just been a development in my thinking where I'm like, oh, there's a chance this thing starts to employ people in future. There's a chance someone else runs this account in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. And so my thinking has evolved past whatever, man, I'm a renegade law firm, I can do and say what I want, into that same energy, but just kind of at a 65%. So gravamen's politics, gravamen's acknowledgement that we stand on unceded land taken and retained by force, gravamen's role in the marketplace is trying to be at once very much commercial and very much progressive, which is a strange dichotomy to balance, but you know, our client base is happy so far, and we'll see how it goes in future. That's all really important to me in relation to how gravamen shows up in the marketplace. But perhaps gravamen doesn't need to talk too much about a horror podcast I work on, or my thoughts about Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares on its real golden run from 2005 to 2010, that sort of thing. So there's an element of gravamen's presence in the marketplace, including its online marketing, is similar to my James's or Coffee and a Case Notes, if we put it that way. But it's definitely designed to be one degree more solemn and professional, and probably one degree less sort of extreme, and probably one degree more worried about typos and technical stuff than I tend to be. It hopefully gravamen shoots a bit less from the hip than I do, but certainly the same DNA. So they're siblings, but gravamen behaves better than I do.
Because it's, I mean, we looked at your company page and you've got over 2,000 followers, which for a company page, it's on LinkedIn, it's really hard to grow so quickly as well. So you've done an amazing job of developing that. And I feel like I know of you quite well and knew of your business through your LinkedIn presence. Yes, it's obviously something you're doing quite well. Has there been a strategy behind that?
Firstly, thanks for the compliment. The strategy has not really deferred from me trying to get confident with the ask. I'm sure when you guys are working with clients, there's that element where we're very happy to be generous with our expertise. We're very happy to say, oh, you know, here are some things I know, best of luck with that, you know, put these things to use. But it's very difficult to then say, hey, if you've got a problem of this kind, or hey, if you've got, you know, money to allocate to your recruiting budget, or if you need to engage a law firm, or just like stepping past that line of branding, you know, awareness rising, you know, like spreading awareness into what we might call fairly directly a sales moment, that a lot of us associate that with ick, right? It's not something natural and easy that comes to a lot of us. I've tried to dodge that issue by making my sale as James or as Coffee in a Case Note of like, hey, could you go follow Graverman, please? And so Graverman's got 500 followers on TikTok and it's got 400 on Instagram and it's got a couple thousand on LinkedIn. And that's really nice. And that's almost purely attributable to, I know we're through the looking glass because I was about to put the word James in inverted commas, which is just ridiculous, of course, because it's me. That's almost solely attributable to like James's presence, my presence on the internet and the Coffee in a Case Note presence on the internet saying, hey, guess what? There's a sibling of this, or there's kind of the business wing, the grown-up arm of what James is up to is Graverman. And it would be, you know, and I tend to say it of like, frankly, it's a favor to me if you're happy to hop on and like this page. And so I tend to end up saying, look, if I've done you, if you've taken value from these weird case summaries or silly jokes or whatever I've done in the past, and you're inclined to do me a favor you can do for me is go click, click, follow. And you never have to look at it. You guys know LinkedIn's algorithm better than I do. No, like company pages don't matter at all, really, on LinkedIn. You never see them in your feed. They're only really there for due diligence or to say, hey, I recently got employed by this person. So on one view, who cares? But on another view, I'm pleased to have Graverman with a little bit of a foot in the door of having some online presence of its own.
And then how much time, like, so you've got all these different accounts going, how much time per week or per day or whatever do you put into them? Is there a set strategy? And do you have any tips for people trying to juggle multiple accounts?
That's a great question that I should have anticipated better when working through our earlier discussions. No, I don't have a set strategy. Like the heart of my content strategy is that I nearly put James in. Is it James, quote, quote, this guy in air quotes, will summarize a piece of corporate litigation in the form of a video from time to time, sort of fortnightly-ish or three times every 2 months is sort of what I'm saying at the moment. And that's the absolute central core of what makes me feel comfortable marketing online, right? I can make as many silly jokes as I want or, share my views on things I consider it important to share my views on. And the reason I have confidence to do that is to say, oh, I'm actually a fairly technically switched on practitioner in my space. And so that gives me comfort to say, yeah, I might just be saying, hey, use my law firm, or just putting literally up a link to my firm's homepage to be like, hey, guess what? It's our homepage. The only reason I have any comfort in doing that is to say, in other ways, I'm showing up online to really deliver as much value as I can to anyone who's interested. And it's that delivery of value that then gives me comfort to take a less labor-intensive approach to the balance. Graverman's marketing is like, hey, did you know we do corporate disputes? Here's a video of our principal talking about corporate disputes. Like, hey, did you know we finally got our website up? Anyway, here's our website. Like, hey, did you know we've got, whatever. Did you know we changed our logo? Here's a photo of the new logo. The only reason I have confidence sharing that's sort of quite banal content is that anyone seeing it hopefully has an interest in the way I show up in these more slightly profound, slightly more valuable ways. So if there's someone who is looking to juggle a number of accounts, the thing I take benefit from is I kind of know centrally what I'm up to, which is I want to build the brand of me / coffee in a case note, and I want to build the brand of Graveman, but I'm in no rush. And that at the center of all this is regularly summarizing technical bits of legal work. And so that means that sort of cross-posting to Graveman type accounts of like, hey, here's some technical legal stuff I feel fairly comfortable with, even though you guys might take the view there's a degree of ick in that sometimes of like, oh, great, why don't I just follow the principal account if all this is a cross-posting sort of exercise. But by building that space with my principal online offering, I've felt more comfortable taking the opportunity in the beauty in the bricks, right? As Spit Syndicate said 15 years ago, those little opportunities between your like foundational building blocks to go, g'day, here's our website. G'day, here's an old interview I did 5 years ago. How funny is it how time passes? And just sort of throw up these fairly basic bits of content. And so I feel like I've said, and sorry, I feel like each leads to the next. And I'm sorry for boring you all on this point. And so for anyone managing multiple accounts, or even a person who has a Julie Jones account and then a Jones Legal account, the benefit I have is having clarity of what's at the very core to how I show up online. And then everything falls from that first domino falling. And so that means that I can make those quick, not quite disposable, but lower value, lower effort posts without being too self-conscious about wasting the time of people around me. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, you're very entertaining online. I remember, you know, I watched your coffee and case notes. There was one time you were wearing a funny tie. There was another time, I can't remember, but I actually watched them. And I mean, I don't work in law, but you're good in front of a camera. How did you learn to be good in front of a camera? Or do you have any tips for other legal professionals that, you know, want to get in front of the camera but are too afraid or worried about how they'll be perceived or whatnot?
To take the last part first, just iterate. Like the first video, the first time you ever see yourself on video, you'll go, ugh, I can't believe I look like that. I can't believe I sound like that. That's just terrible. And I can't let anyone see that. And you can delete that video and that's fine. But I would encourage you to publish the third or fourth you record, right? There has to be a moment where you jump off the cliff and you've then set the standard of like, great, just do slightly better next time. And you iterate is my suggestion. And you can start by, if we're talking about appearing on video online, you can start with what we might refer to as more disposable type content of very quickly chatting in an Instagram story. Hey, everyone, I hate being on video, but just wanted to let you know that it's been a big year for Blogs Illegal. I'm looking forward to helping some more clients and sharing some more information with you next year. Cheers, bye. And just putting it up on your Instagram story, never thinking about it again. And tomorrow, trying to get the same confidence to say more or less exactly the same thing. Here's a tour of my office. Here's the kind of areas of law we do. Here's a frequently asked question I get. Just drip. Those sort of quick little videos that can build your confidence. And so iterate is my suggestion for anyone thinking about it. For me, I had a number of hugely beneficial bits of experience before starting the Coffee and a Case Note project. Firstly, legal presentations I'd done over a number of years. And so talking about legal stuff in front of people is something I'd had experience with and enjoyed. Secondly, I'd done kind of like radio for a number of years, including like afternoon shows where you kind of just need to keep the take running. And the only thing that's going to save you is putting a song on. And so, you know, you are being an engaging and entertaining person. Now there's no space for sorries here. There's no space for deep breaths here. There's like, you're just like, you are engaging with people right now until you're not. And so for so long as the red light's on, you are also on. And so that's sort of a skill set and a mindset that you've got to be in. Yeah. And sort of the final one, but also probably the first chronologically, is when I was engaged in the hip hop scene in Sydney in the sort of mid 2000s. I used to go in battles in kind of and you guys are probably familiar with the cliche where you've got someone plays an instrumental record at 4/4 of about 75 to 85 BPM, and someone does rapping insults to the other person, and you make them up on I'm afraid so. Just imagine it vastly worse. Okay, vastly less entertaining, vastly worse, and you're there. And so that kind of requires you to very much be in the moment of like compressing and translating an idea. On reflection, it's reasonably good for your brain, right? You're listening to something someone said, thinking about how you're going to respond, processing that in a way that is in time with the instrumental music you're listening to, and in a way that rhymes, and while putting on the character of someone who is occupying a lot of space and really commanding an audience. And so these kind of various different skill sets kind of coalesced into someone, I keep referring to me like I'm not me, into me being able to stare into the little black dot in your phone if you're in a cafe for 8 or 10 minutes and be like, hey, there was a few shareholders. They were mean to each other. And the judge said they had to wind up the company. So it sort of gave me the skill set needed to be able to hang on to these fairly complex facts and sort of deliver them without a sort of rehearsal or without notes, and then just get out, really. So I'm very much a one take and one and done. I'm a one take Timmy. And so it's just, if you apply that kind of pressure, well, to me and to a number of other people, you tend to get reasonably good results. And so far I'm yet to make a disastrous one. So I'm sort of happy so far. I'm sure there's a terrible one just around the corner, but yeah, I was sort of lucky to have a breeding ground of kind of various different skills that were able to kind of coalesce into someone who'd be pretty useful at saying legal things on as part of video content. And for anyone else, iterate. You don't have to go and battle people in the car park. You can just be somewhere comfortable in your house with a friend. You can have a glass of wine beforehand and then just move the glass of wine out of shot and be like, g'day, Blog's illegal. It's the best law firm for you. Just practice that a few times.
I also just think if you're considering in your head, as I can't talk right now, but if you keep on thinking I'm adding value, like what value am I adding to my audience? This isn't about me. This is about helping you. That helps me be able to communicate on camera. And I often say that to lawyers, like, don't think about yourself. Think about how you're going to help the person that's listening to your video or watching your video.
It's perfect advice, because a lot of us, and probably literally all of us, all the non-sociopaths in the room, will be asking themselves, well, what right do I have to interrupt someone's day, right? What basis could I have for saying, hey, over here, look at me. And Monica, you're so right. The only reason you would have is to sit down and say, look, I'm going to share something with you that might genuinely help you. And it might just be an amusing anecdote, right? That might assist, or it might just be helping you understand what my business does, but you are adding value to the person who watches it. The one thing I'd add on that is to say, they can just flick past you. You know, you're not standing there accosting them in the street. You're not a person who is seeking to have them sign up for monthly donations to a charity in a shopping center. You're someone who, with a flick of their finger, can like move quickly out of their way. So there's no need to be too self-conscious or too apologetic about sharing value with people, because if I don't find it valuable, I'll flick past it. And frankly, I hate watching videos on LinkedIn. And so that might sound a little silly to say, but I'm not going to watch that video. And if we're friends, I'll probably like it and be like, oh, great stuff. But I'm not actually gonna watch it. And so that's why I feel fairly comfortable with publishing things. And if people don't like, great, they'll just go straight past.
Yeah. Is there a platform that you think works better? So obviously, you know, LinkedIn, you've got a big presence on there. Is that your number one? And if so, what's your number two?
Number two is probably YouTube, but that's more for a show your working kind of element, to be like, hey, I actually know what I'm talking about. Take a look at some of these. Or I actually know what I'm talking about. So I withdraw that. Or I'm thinking of a case in my head and I go, oh, I know where I was when I was telling people about this case. I was in a pub on Market Street in Sydney and I filmed a video there. Hang on, let me go to YouTube. Scroll, 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 scroll. Oh, there's that pub. That's right. You can bring a derivative action if you're the beneficiary of a trust, but only if you meet these certain criteria. Bang. And so in part four, being able to have a shorthand for calling upon some of these fairly technical legal concepts, and in part four, sort of almost a CV of things I know, I find YouTube valuable. Instagram, I find really valuable for people feel comfortable sending messages there. And so there's a degree of formality to LinkedIn where people might be a little reluctant because, you know, you visit someone's page and it's like, oh, Blogsy visited your page and that kind of thing. Instagram people are like, hey, my aunt, you know, owns a business with someone else. I don't think it's going really well. Like, are you happy to hop on a call sometime tomorrow? Here's my mobile. That kind of message is a really low threshold kind of message that feels quite comfortable to users of Instagram. I'm sure you both, and I could as well, imagine sending a message like that to a professional I was interested in working with. Of like, hey, do you have fitness classes open on early Friday mornings or whatever? Like, just sort of sending off that kind of DM. And that's kind of where I've got the most energy going would be LinkedIn and Instagram, with YouTube as the kind of backup. 18 months ago, I would have said TikTok, but I just find TikTok super boring at the moment. I don't know if that reflects something about my personality or anything like that. But I do think you've got to be there in order just to be like, hey, I understand that it exists. But very much Instagram, LinkedIn. YouTube, I'm at. Podcasts are useful. Facebook, I get very little value from. X or Twitter, I get very little value from. Not on Pinterest, not on Snapchat, and not planning to change that. And so, yeah, LinkedIn, Instagram, YouTube is probably my top three.
Yeah. Probably similar to us.
Yeah. We're trying to do the TikTok thing too.
Yeah, TikTok's just wild. Like, I started it when we started the podcast because Josh has retail and e-commerce businesses. So he's quite, he uses TikTok a lot, and whereas I'm all just LinkedIn. And I have grown a presence, but they're strange people. Like, they're not my target market. Mm. Most of them aren't in Australia. In saying that, our listeners to our podcast, so only 60% of them are in Australia. Yeah, and we're getting contact from Belgium, from the US, and people are contacting us and commenting on the podcast, and they're finding it from TikTok.
Magic.
So, yeah, so it has its place.
I don't deny it. You're more hearing, like, I've been on there since sort of mid-2019. And there's just a degree of fatigue of having seen it. So this is very like Instagram 2015 to me, of like, it's just like, oh yeah, okay, I get this now. Like, yeah, I get it. It's short videos, you know, congrats. Like, it's kind of where my head's at. And so the only energy I apply to it is Q&A, similar to you guys getting those questions coming in. And so I find what questions are almost a prompt to make more content, right? Someone has watched your video and said, oh, when you mentioned this, does that mean this? And you go to, yeah, it's funny you say so. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Here's a case for you to look at, you know, cheers. And it pains me to say this, but the most promising piece of litigation to come in to Graviman this year, 2024, arose from a DM on TikTok from someone who'd been following for a while. And so it means, very sadly, I can't shut it down or close it or ignore it. I've got to just keep eating my vegetables and checking TikTok and going, oh, yep, thanks for the comment. Oh, yep, thanks for the support. But look, give me 3 months and I'm sure I'll be back. So long as this case goes well, of course. If not, boo to TikTok forever, I'm sure.
Yeah.
What's next for Graviman and for you?
I don't know. It's a very short point. One of the challenges that's been issued by a loved one or the loved one in my life recently and indeed regularly is the idea of like forming goals for it, because there's one version of the future where it's essentially almost a coaching business in structure, right? It's got one employee, that employee charges an hourly rate, gives a couple of talks around the place, sells a couple of online trainings, and essentially it's a business name for this one person to go and buzz around the place talking about legal stuff, go to court a few times, send a few letters, and that's it. It's basically just me. There's another version of the future where it is in a more traditional sense, a firm of people that is more than one, that might employ people or enter into a relationship with co-owners or enter into a relationship with contractors or employees or any number of people in order to do the things that I want Graveman to do. And I don't know which one interests me more. And so for the moment, it's very much a one foot in front of the other. Let's just pick up matters that we've got capacity to do, that are in our area to do. Let's refer on matters that we don't feel like doing or that we don't have capacity to do. And let's see where that leaves us in 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, whatever it might be. That's sort of my current plan, but I'm trying, as a result of the advice I referred to a moment ago, to be a little more considered in what is next for the firm. That's the firm perspective. Personally, part of the basis for forming this firm is for my family. And so I want to stay on all the school runs and stay on coaching the sports teams. So far, I've missed one school run this term, and I'm hoping to miss very few more. And so part of Graveman's and my goals for this year to make sure that it can bend and flex in order to have dinner on the table and the ironing done and all these kinds of things. And it's been moderately successful so far. There's still a fair bit of ironing to get done that I'll need to get to this evening. But yeah, a big part of my goals and Graveman's goals is to be able to look serve its clients, bring value to the marketplace, while also serving my family and bringing value to the family too.
Yeah, nice.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just about to launch a business tomorrow and I'm kind of the same.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very exciting.
Tell us.
So I'm going back to recruitment, recruitment agency called Connected People. Yeah, so back to legal recruitment. But similar to you, I have an idea of doing recruitment for legal and accounting, but also doing personal branding. So lots of firms have contacted us and said, can you come in and do some training on personal branding with our staff, get them on TikTok, which I love, but probably similar to you, I also love recruitment. So hopefully we're going to build an empire that'll do it all.
Yes. Yeah. Ticking all the boxes, capitalism forever. Connected People, Monica, is that the Monica indeed? Yes. Silly joke. Yes. That's a good one. Monica, congrats. So where can we follow Connected People? We can find it on TikTok. We can find it on LinkedIn. At the time this
goes to air. Yeah. By the time this goes to air, it'll be a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So it'll be out there, but yeah, it'll be all out there. But happy to chat with you because I'm in startup mode too. If you ever want to have those chats about being startup, we just established a book club that's got other startup people, mainly in Newcastle, but it's all about professional development. Feel free to join that as well because it is a bit lonely when you're first going out.
Yeah, it's good fun. Look, I'm just down the M1. I'm live from the Central Coast as we chat. We've lived here for about 10 or 15 years now. And again, how often Graveman needs to be in Sydney or indeed Newcastle remains an open question. So happy to accept guidance and to read the books and have the chats, Monica. It sounds exciting.
Sounds wonderful.
And hey, we might even start a Newcastle-based professional services rap battle group.
Whoa.
No, I'm sure everyone would be too shook to ever face me, Josh. So you'd probably try to start us and they'd find out I was in there and then that'd be the end. Oh, battle rap talk. What's up? Thank you both so much for having me as well. It's a nice opportunity to sort of reflect on these things. And I'm a new fan of the pod. So there's a nice sort of, moderate time listener, first time guest, first time caller sort of energy. So really, really appreciate what you're pushing out into the marketplace and really lovely to be here and be a part of it.
Yeah, awesome. No, thank you. Thank you for coming on. And we always end every episode as well with a challenge that we set for our listeners. Do you have a challenge that you'd like to, other than joining a rap battle?
I'm not sure I will do it in the form of rap battle, Josh, and that's because I'm very happy to talk tough. But then when someone's like, oh, would you like me to call your bluff? I'm like, oh, no, please don't call my bluff. Please never do. I was bluffing. Challenge, if you are someone who has published less video content than I have and you are interested in adding video to your branding strategy, to publish one video and to tag Monica and tag Josh in it on whatever platform it may be. If it is to be an Instagram story, it must be at least 5 seconds in length, and we must hear what business it is in support of. It is the at least 5 seconds video challenge. Monica and Josh are going to know if you've done your homework. So there's accountability there. And there's parameters there.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Wonderful.
Not a lot to ask. At least 5 seconds. Come on. You can just say your business name and say, call us today.
Yeah.
Great challenge. Yeah.
Where can people find you?
Everywhere is sort of the plan. So wherever you're comfortable using the internet, I'd like to try to be there. You can find me personally, James Dapici, DAPICE. You can find me as Coffee in a Case Note. You can find my firm, Graverman. You can find my podcast about horror films, Spooko. You can find my podcast about, you know, Gordon Ramsay's golden run on kitchen nightmares. That's called The Nightmare Method. Hopefully I'm around if you want to find me. But it will be a little more difficult to find my phone number and email address, and that's sort of, you know, part of the plan. So wherever you're using the internet, if you chuck in Coffee in a Case Note, hopefully I'll be nearby somewhere.
Yeah, awesome.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Yeah, really enjoyed this chat.
Delighted to be here. Thank you. Thanks to you both for having me.
Well, thank you. And we'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Look forward to it.
Thanks for listening. We hope you're feeling inspired and ready to take your personal brand to the next level.
If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button, rate, and leave us a review. Your feedback means the world to us and helps others discover our show.
And remember, building a personal brand is not a destination. It's a continuous journey. Connect with us by searching Personal Branding Unlocked on all your socials to stay updated and continue the conversation.
Until next time, keep crafting your professional identity, because you are the brand that speaks volumes.